Anchored is a production of the Classic Learning Test. Based in Annapolis, Maryland, reconnecting knowledge and virtue through meaningful assessments. Visit us at cltexam.com/get-started.
Welcome back to the Anchored Podcast, the official podcast of the Classic Learning Test. Today, we are here with Cassidy Siftestad, who is currently a graduate student at the University of Arkansas and formerly a Hillsdale College student. So Cassidy, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me, Jeremy. I'm happy to be here.
So probably no surprise, Hillsdale College, where I'm going to be out actually there again next week, is the number one. It's currently the most popular option for CLT test takers. So I love connecting with CLT alum. About a quarter, maybe more, of CLT staff are Hillsdale graduates. We have Taryn Murphy and Soren Schwab. A lot of great folks here, formerly Rachel Greb as well. So we'll talk all things Hillsdale. But love to start off a little bit before that, kind of your journey to Hillsdale, early childhood education. What kind of schools did you go to growing up?
Yeah, so I was raised in a suburb outside of Sacramento in California, and I come from a long line of educators. So my mom's a teacher, my grandmother was a teacher, as well as my sister-in-law and other family members. So I grew up in schools, even, you know, beyond attending the schools, because my mom was a teacher. And I attended public schools all the way through 12th grade, but I had a stint in middle school in a collegiate prep charter school. So I was in the public school system. And as a kid, I loved to learn. I mean, I guess as an adult, I love to learn as well, but I really liked going to school. And I had a really strong sense of what I thought my education should be like. So I guess, I don't know why, maybe because my mom's a teacher and I would say I had a sort of a classical household, a very Socratic dinner table, lots of very robust conversation. But when I was in the classroom, I remember thinking critically about the education I was receiving. And being in public school around the time that I was growing up, I think it became more politicized over time. And so I would notice different lessons in class were somewhat politicized or were bent towards the, you know, the leanings of the teacher. And I remember thinking to myself, we are all very sponge-like and these kids don't know that that's your opinion. And it bothered me, especially when I happened to disagree with them. But I knew that I wanted an education in college from an institution that believed that truth is immutable and that truth is and that education is about moral formation in addition and character formation in addition to an intellectual cultivation. And so through 12th grade, I started researching colleges and trying to find one that had a philosophy of education that matched mine. And when I went to Hillsdale, I just remember thinking, this is everything.
You found it. And tell us a bit about mom. Hopefully she's a fan of the Anchored Pod as well, but mom, is she still teaching? What grades does she teach?
Yeah. So the last several years, my mom has overseen a homeschool cohort. So she worked for a charter school in California, and she had a caseload of different families who were homeschooling, but she did a lot of work in middle school when I was growing up. And she's a really significant influence in my life. And one of the reasons why I knew that I wanted to go into school choice advocacy and work in education was because my mom navigated she exercised school choice for my brothers and I in different ways throughout the years, depending on our needs. So we were transferred to a different public high school because my mom didn't want us to go to the one nearby, but that district wouldn't release us. So she found a policy loophole.
And so we need to do a future pod with both you and your mom on here. Would she say she's seen a big transition in American mainstream ed to becoming increasingly politicized?
She would. I would too. I mean, even in the time that I've been alive and experiencing education, but yeah, my mom would as well. She's you could just interview her yourself. Like you could just, I would love to do it with her. You could just talk this is a very important topic for her. And so she asked, when I would ask her questions about the state of things or what I heard in class one day, she would ask me to do some research or to think about it first. And then after I shared my thoughts, then she would talk to me about her perspective on things. And so she homeschooled one of my brothers for academic reasons for 1 year to get him caught up for health reasons. And then she homeschooled my other brother for 1 year because he had a teacher who was suspected of some nefarious things. And she didn't have proof, but he was later convicted. So,
oh my gosh, wow.
She was really astute. Both my parents, my mom really had her finger on our education. And so she, you know, did what she needed with them. And then she put me in that charter school for a couple of years and got us into a different high school. And so the concept of school choice was at the front of my mind because I benefited from it. And
wow. Okay. So long before it became part of the national conversation, everybody's talking about school choice now, but this has been part of your life, your educational journey. Was Hillsdale also kind of a known quantity growing up?
Yeah. I wrote down when I was 8 years old that I was going to attend Hillsdale College.
Oh, wow. That's amazing.
It's funny because I don't think I had that at the front of my mind going through high school. I almost rediscovered it, but I used to write my papers on the American founding whenever possible. If I could redirect a prompt at in my history classes to talk about the founding, I would try. And I used to reference Hillsdale's source lists and articles to make sure I was on the right track. So I knew about them long before I attended, but I was relieved to find they were as wonderful as I thought they were when I went there.
Now, I know at Hillsdale, you were awarded the Russell Kirk Scholarship in American Studies. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Yeah. So Russell Kirk had a significant impact at Hillsdale. There's an endowed scholarship used from money from him and his family. And we have an American Studies honorary as well that goes to his home in, I think it's Macosta, Michigan, to meet with his wife and go to his library every year, which I was able to do. And
that is so cool.
It was wonderful. I sat up until 1 a.m. talking to Annette Kirk, his wife, about how they met and fell in love and his legacy. And so we have,
how old would she be now?
I don't want to guess, but I think she's pretty.
But yeah, his influence was in the 50s and 60s, and
I think they were almost 20 years apart in age. So she was younger than him. They fell in love writing letters to one another, and he just sort of captured her heart, and they got married. And she carries on his tradition. She should be. I think she should be pretty high up there in years now.
But, yeah.
She was wonderful, and it was a great experience because when you are an American Studies major, you can qualify for a scholarship, and the funds come from his foundation, I believe. And I was an American Studies major and got to learn about him and his influence, and it was wonderful.
Now, I'd love for you to comment here. I mean, you graduated from Hillsdale, I believe, in 2018. But even since then, certainly since your freshman year when you applied, Hillsdale has become really a national kind of firebrand. I mean, I've talked to an alum who said, yeah, 15 years ago, nobody knew Hillsdale College when I said I went there. And now everybody's like, you went to Hillsdale College. Like,
yeah,
everybody now knows the name of Hillsdale College. What has that been like for you as an alum? And what role do you see Hillsdale playing in American higher ed?
Hillsdale, the reputation is something that as an alum and as a student, you have to steward, I think, because you, when people meet you, you are a tangible representation of what Hillsdale is, or at least that's how they view you. And that's not something I realized until I went to Washington, D.C. So I lived there two separate times when I was an undergraduate. I did some internships, and then I moved there for 2 years after I graduated. And the moment I realized how influential Hillsdale was, really, I was in an elevator at the Heritage Foundation with a congressman and two other interns. It just was, we were going down the elevator, and we happened to be in the speaking to this gentleman, and he asked us where we went to college. And I think it was Tulane, Cornell, and Hillsdale, which are all, you know, wonderful schools. And he just wanted to talk to me about Hillsdale. I was the one he wanted to talk to. And I mean, but I was representing Hillsdale to him. And so, you know, that was a really surreal moment to me. And I think what it means, I mean, Hillsdale is an example of what it's like to remain steadfast in an era where culture and religion and morality are sort of bending to the winds, and they're not as sturdy and unmoving as they used to be. And Hillsdale stands for something. And sometimes that's an unattractive and difficult thing to do. And they won't compromise. And I'm glad. And it sometimes that doesn't, you know, people don't like that, but I don't mind.
Well, we at CLT, we love Hillsdale, and we certainly love hiring. I'm really proud that we employ as many Hillsdale graduates as we do. It must be, I think it's five or six right now. And really, I mean, just incredible human formation is what they had during their 4 years. And it's so rare now that a college is doing that kind of work. So love going out there. Cassidy, I want to shift over a bit and talk about your academic work at the University of Arkansas around school choice. We can talk all things Corey DeAngelis, of course, but it has been incredible how this went from not a part really of the national discussion to everyone knows the concept of school choice. Mm-hmm. Tell us a bit, kind of high level, what your academic work is focused on.
Yeah. So I am a third year PhD student at the Department of Education Reform at the University of Arkansas. And I will have a PhD in education policy, Lord willing, by the time I'm done. And my areas of research and emphasis are school choice broadly, and then also classical education, which is something I'm very passionate about. And I'm interested in school choice policy because, you know, in order to usually access a school that teaches that has a classical philosophy of education or that is a Christian school, you sometimes are unable to do that because of policy barriers. And so I think it's important to address the access to school choice, like choice schools, which, you know, those are usually our classical schools. And then also I'm interested in classical education because it, like you said, it's skyrocketing. And my research, I've done research in a few different areas. So I've looked at funding disparities between traditional public schools and public charter schools. You know, they're both public schools. They're in the public school system. But if you choose to attend a public charter school, you automatically have less money funding your education. And that poses different, issues and difficulties. So I've researched that, but a report that I'm working on right now that I'm very excited about is with Dr. Albert Chang, who is my advisor. And we are working with the Texas Public Policy Foundation to examine classical charter school growth in Texas over the past decade. And it's a really great project because Texas is a wonderful example of, you know, what classical education can look like. It's booming.
You know, one of the most incredible school tours I've done is Founders Classical in Leander. You may be familiar with that school, but it's really incredible. It kind of blew my mind for what a classical charter school can be like. Cassidy, I'm a school choice advocate, but by no means an expert. So I'd love to throw at you a couple of the objections that I hear. I married into a great, thoughtful family that doesn't necessarily agree with some things on the political right. So how would you respond to these kinds of objections? That the students that are going to be left in a school choice system are going to be the students with the least engaged parents. So that's one of the arguments I've heard against school choice, that it's going to, that I think maybe is worth some consideration. How would you respond to that?
I think, you know, it's one of the issues with another issue people have with school choice is the idea that parents don't always consider certain different factors when moving their kids around. You know, I mentioned earlier, my mom moved one brother around for a health decision, one brother around for a safety decision. I was moved around for academic considerations, and parents don't necessarily have all the information about the schools and their quality. I think we operate on the assumption that parents generally want what's best for their kids and hope for a good education. But as far as the kids who are left in the public schools, I mean, there's a wide array of students who still attend the traditional public schools. And sometimes we have a lot of parents who are extremely engaged, who want their kids to stay in the traditional public schools because they want their children to like do good there, and they want to take their family and their resources and invest in the public school system because they think that it's worthwhile. Now, I commend that, but there, you know, school choice can bring families out of the public school system who are high needs, who need help, you know, are low income families, different students who might be harder to educate. Some of those students are the ones who exercise school choice and who are brought out. And so you could argue that, you know, you could just flip the argument back and say, well, you know, some of the high need students are leaving. And so that could benefit the traditional public, you know, the public school in the opposite direction.
I've heard this actually surprisingly kind of anti-school choice argument from some of the most conservative, kind of deeply religious, and it's more of a concern than an objection. And the thought is that it's going to strengthen the power of the Department of Ed to be able to kind of say what is and what is not a school. You know, if we fast forward 20 years in terms of who, where can the funds go? You know, that somebody you have to have the, it strengthens the power of the accreditation bodies to say this is a school, this is not a school. And that ultimately goes back to the Department of Ed. I'd be interested if you have any way to address that concern as well.
Yeah, I have a lot of thoughts on that one. I fundamentally disagree with the existence of the Department of Education.
Yes, hear, hear.
The Constitution, you know, enumerated the powers of the federal government, and the education was not included. Although all of the founders, most of the founders, wrote about how important education is, so it was valuable to them. But I believe that it's a state. Yeah,
it was too important for the federal government to get involved. They knew that, right? I mean,
yeah. So that's the first thing I would say is it's hard. I mean, I'll talk about the Department of Education, and I believe that wonderful people can work there, of course, and that you can, you know, in my mind, the best, those who work at the Department of Ed are best served in trying to limit its, you know, reach. But my point is, I don't have anything against the folks who work there. I just wish it wasn't a place to work in the first place.
You know, I'm so glad your clarity and boldness with just saying it shouldn't exist. It shouldn't exist. And, you know, we had Lexi Hudson on our podcast who worked at the Department of Ed for 2 years, and it was incredible to hear that you have this massively funded $100 billion a year bureaucracy, and she would say completely antithetical to authentic education.
Yeah, and education is such a personal topic. Everyone has their experience. They've all, you know, we've all been educated in some way. And so there are oftentimes people have strong opinions about this because they think that by saying it shouldn't exist, you're attacking someone they know or, you know, someone who works there. And I could work there, but I think it's just a separate conversation. Do I see the Department of Education going away anytime soon? Probably not. I can still say that I don't think it should exist. Mm-hmm. And so, if you take that statement and then we now talk about accreditation and affirming what is and isn't a school, I mean, that's a policy question. And I think that's interesting because, I mean, I'm interested in that because again, this is where education is, it's very political. It's super political, and it's there's a lot of tension and disagreement, and you know, like there are folks whose entire careers are spent lobbying on this topic, and so I think that it's interesting that, I mean, I don't know exactly what I think fully about accreditation. But what I do know is that if it's really, really strict, then all of the schools that end up being accredited are going to look a lot like each other. And that goes against what school choice really like, what the values that undergird school choice. It suggests that we need different kinds of schools to satisfy different kinds of people. So I think there's a, you know, you want schools that honor the money that's given to them. Like, they are honorable in their use of funds, and they, you know, teach their the kids and their students how to read properly and different things like that. But if you start to really restrict what those schools look like, then you lose out on the spirit of school choice, which is, you know, schools tailored to the different needs of our many different kinds of people.
Cassidy, this is just anecdotal, but it's my take that conservatives generally, you know, we're not very engaged with education, especially, you know, when I was growing up, this is, you know, late 80s, 90s. It seems like that has changed in a pretty serious way. Is that accurate?
I think so. I mean, I don't know about, I'm not so sure about how engaged or disengaged they were in the past, but I know that at least since I graduated from high school, there's been almost an awakening. And I think what it is people are realizing that their local public school, even if the folks who teach there are wonderful people, there's something systemic about maybe the traditional public school that is now different today from what it used to be, and that is different from the values that they have. And so they know that they're realizing if they send their kids to these schools, they're the philosophy of education of the general, you know, traditional public school system is different than what a conservative might value or want for themselves. And I'm being general, of course, but yes, I believe that, that they've become more aware, and COVID exacerbated things. And what it did was it brought education into the home. So parents were in the other room listening to what their kids were being told, and they actually realized what they were hearing, and it made them understand that maybe they want something else for themselves.
Yeah. I feel like we're living through a seismic disruption in mainstream ed. I mean, you look at just homeschooling, especially among Black families, 3% to 16% over a period of like 4 or 5 years. Really, really wild. Cassidy, question we always end the Anchored podcast with, we love to talk about books, the books that have been most formative. I'm wondering what that is for you, if there's a book that you come back to and maybe reread every year or so.
I'm glad that you end on that question. I would say, I know that we're talking about education, but faith-wise, a book that has been formative for me is called Holiness by J.C. Ryle. And I think obviously the Bible is the best place to go. But as far as, you know, a treatise on what holy living looks like and how to live, you know, how to become Christ-like and be sanctified and how best to live, I value that book a lot. I would say outside of faith-based reading, and it might be, I don't know about cliche, but I guess this is almost like citing the Bible in conservatism or in a political philosophy, but the Federalist Papers were really, really formative for me. I think that at Hillsdale, it's common to read the Federalist Papers. And so I feel like it's almost cliche. It's like, oh, the Constitution's my favorite thing to read, but it's something that I've read very many times, and it helps me articulate and think well on what the nature of freedom and how our country was made. And also, when you know how something ought to be or what a good thing looks like, then you also know very well what it looks like when it's been degraded or has changed. And so it helped me think about our modern, you know, American political regime and the education system and bureaucracy. And so I would say Federalist 51 is probably my favorite.
Love it. Well, Cassidy, thank you for the work that you're doing and helping to lead this charge for school choice. It's incredible to see just support, you know, poll after poll. It's continuing to grow in awareness. And I'd love to have you back on, get updates. But thanks for your time. And I look forward to connecting again in the future.
Thank you for having me. It's been wonderful talking.
I want to take a quick break here from the podcast to make a special invite here to join us for a live event that we do almost every Thursday night. We call it JTAB, our Journey Through the Author Bank. And the idea is to take a top professor at a CLT partner college and have them teach on a thinker from the CLT Author Bank. So it could be, for example, a great mind from Benedictine or Ave Maria or Hillsdale or Grove City, and they're teaching on C.S. Lewis. Or Dante, or Flannery O'Connor, or Shakespeare. It's a great event. On our website, cltexam.com, under Find a College, you can navigate to Author Bank Seminars. And on that page, you can register for our mailing list and never miss one of these seminars. High school students also have a chance to participate in these seminars. We've done this on C.S. Lewis, Dante, Shakespeare, you name it. It's a great time. Invite your children, invite your friends. It's a live event. It's a lot of fun. We hope to see you there.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Anchored. If you enjoyed it, please be sure to leave a rating or review on your podcast platform of choice. And remember to subscribe and share with your friends and colleagues. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time.